Okay, let's just jump right in. Picture this. Think Vietnam, the jungle. You can almost feel the humidity, right? And then you hear that sound, that deep thrum of an engine cutting through the air. That's kind of where we're going today on the deep dive.
Yeah, and what's really striking about today's source is it's straight from the horse's mouth, A firsthand account of stuff that was kept under wraps for a long, long time.
Exactly. And that's what we do here on the deep dive. You give us the source material, maybe something you stumbled across or wanted to know more about. We pull out the key knowledge. It's your shortcut to getting informed fast.
And today we're doing just that with a really compelling interview. We're looking at the experiences of a pilot named Doc Blanchard.
Right, Doc Blanchard. His story, which he tells in this YouTube interview, basically puts you right there in the cockpit during some, well, incredibly secret missions over Vietnam.
He flew with the 56 Special Operations Wing, part of a unit called Operating Location Alpha, or OLA. This wasn't just regular air support.
No, definitely not. This was all about covering these super classified special ops missions. So for you listening, this is a chance to really understand a pretty unique and frankly vital piece of military history.
And the source we're digging into is that interview with Jock from the Military Tales YouTube channel. It's episode 38, the full interview with Doc Blanchard. So maybe we should start with who was Doc Blanchard? How'd he get that name?
Good place to start. Where did he come from?
Well, Doc wasn't his real first name. It was actually Warren, but he got the nickname because of Warren Blanchard, the famous football player from West Point. Same last name.
Ah, okay. A little bit of borrowed fame there.
Sort of, yeah. Anyway, our Doc Blanchard joined the Air Force back in 1968. Went through pilot training, standard stuff, and eventually got assigned to fly the A-1 Skyraider.
The Skyraider.
Yeah.
That plane, even late in the war, it was still a beast, wasn't it? What made it so useful?
Oh, yeah. It was tough. It could carry a ridiculous amount of ordnance bombs, rockets, guns, you name it. And it could hang around for a long time over a target. Slow, yeah, but armored and persistent. Perfect for close air support.
Makes sense. So, where did he first see action in Vietnam?
His first assignment was with the 6th Special Operations Squadron down at Pleiku in the Central Highlands. He mentioned being a very new second lieutenant there.
And he said that's where he really learned his bombing skills.
Exactly. He talks about honing his pinpoint bombing technique there, which, turned out to be absolutely critical later on for the kind of missions OLA flew.
Right, precision was key. But he wasn't at Pleiku for that long, was he?
No, things changed. The decision was made to shut down that whole squadron, pull the A-1s out of Pleiku entirely.
Where did they go?
Move north up to Nakhon Phanom in Thailand, NKP as it was known. Seems like a pretty big strategic shift.
But did that work, moving them so far away?
Well, no, not really. Apparently, within just a couple of months, they realized they couldn't effectively provide air cover for that crucial tri-border area, where Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia meet from all the way up in Thailand. Pleiku had been perfectly positioned for that.
So what then? Send people back.
Pretty much. They asked for volunteers to go back to Pleiku on what they call temporary duty, TDY. And Doc said almost everyone who'd been there before put their hand up. They wanted to go back.
Wow, that says something. But TDY, that
That wasn't
sounds
it.
expensive, paying extra allowances and all that.
You nailed it. After about 2 months of paying everyone TDY rates, the money people started noticing. It was costing a lot.
So they needed a more permanent fix.
Exactly. That's when they decided to set up a permanent detachment back in that area, specifically to cover those missions without the TDY costs. That detachment was initially called Operating Location Alpha Alpha, OLAA.
OLA, okay. And that eventually became OLA.
Yes, it later moved to Da Nang and became known primarily as OLA. A bit of a roundabout journey, but that's how it came to be.
Okay, so OLA is set up in Da Nang. What was their specific job? You said it wasn't typical air support.
Right, highly specific. Doc Blanchard is very clear. OLA's number one mission was direct air support for the Army's Studies and Observations Group, SOG.
SOG.
Yeah.
That name carries a lot of weight. Very secretive stuff. What were these SOG teams actually doing?
They were running incredibly dangerous clandestine operations, usually small teams, like 2 American Green Berets leading maybe a dozen or so indigenous troops, mountain yards, or South Vietnamese special forces.
And where are they going?
Deep into Laos, mostly. Sometimes Cambodia or North Vietnam. Their main job was intelligence gathering, watching the Ho Chi Minh Trail, reporting enemy movement, tapping communication lines, sometimes sabotage too. Real high-risk stuff.
Going into Laos, I mean, that's enemy heartland. They must have needed serious backup. Is that where OLA came in with Prairie Fire?
Exactly. Prairie Fire, that was the code name for OLA's main job, providing that close air support umbrella for the SOG teams.
Covering them going in, coming up.
And especially when things went wrong. When a team got hit, compromised, needed an emergency extraction. That's when OLA pilots like Doc were scrambled. He mentions they kept 8 A1s on alert status at Da Nang, 247, pilots ready to go at a moment's notice.
8 planes always ready. Yeah. That really tells you something about the tempo and the danger. And
yeah,
the SOG teams themselves, the casualty rates were bad.
Horrific. Doc says he heard figures approaching, like 100% casualties over a tour of killed or wounded. It was brutal.
Unbelievable risk.
But here's the flip side. Yeah. He also talks about how much confidence the Green Berets on the ground had when they knew the A1s, the Sky Raiders, were overhead. It was a huge morale boost for them.
I can imagine. Just hearing that engine must have made a difference. Now, Doc also mentioned flying really low, right? Almost dangerously low sometimes.
Yeah. He said there were basically no altitude restrictions for them. The absolute priority was getting the bombs exactly where they needed to be, right on the enemy.
Even if the enemy was extremely close to the SOG team.
Especially then. Sometimes the teams would call for strikes literally on their own position if they were about to be overrun. It was that desperate. Friendly fire was a huge risk, but sometimes it was the only option left.
That's a terrifying choice to make. And the North Vietnamese Army, the NVA, they knew about the air power threat. How did they try to counter it?
Their main tactic, Doc mentions, was to get in super close to the American or Allied forces, grabbing them by the belt buckle, they called it.
To make it impossible for planes or artillery to hit them without hitting their own guys.
Exactly. It neutralized that advantage, or at least made it much, much harder for pilots like Doc to engage without risking friendly casualties. Made the A1's precision even more vital.
He tells a story about one specific Prairie Fire mission, doesn't he? What happened there?
Yeah, a really vivid one. They got scrambled to pull out a SOG team that was in deep trouble, taking heavy fire. The team put out a visual marker panel on the ground. They couldn't use smoke because that would just draw more fire.
Okay, so they needed to spot this panel from the air.
Right. Doc saw it. But his wingman, unfortunately, didn't see it properly and dropped his bombs way too close to the team. Dangerously close.
Oh, no. Did they hit them?
Miraculously, no direct hit, but you can imagine the chaos. And then, incredibly, the team leader gets on the radio, says something like, okay, we've got some wounded here, but we're still good to go. Proceed with extraction.
Wow. Just, wow. The resilience.
Absolutely incredible. Shows you what those SOG guys were made of and the pressure everyone was under.
Did Doc interact much with the SOG soldiers during the war itself? Did they get to know each other?
He says not really. Very little interaction back then. It wasn't until years later at reunions like SOT, that's Special Operations Warrior Talk, that the pilots and the ground guys really connected.
That's interesting. What was that like?
He shares some funny stories about it. Apparently, the pilots thought the SOG guys were crazy for crawling around in the jungle with the enemy everywhere.
And the SOG guys?
They thought the pilots were insane for flying low and slow, making themselves targets for anti-aircraft fire. Just completely different perspectives on what was dangerous.
Different kinds of courage, I guess. He also mentioned Operation Tailwind, even though he wasn't there for it.
Yeah, he brought it up because it happened shortly after he left, September 1970. He called it the mother of all SOG missions.
Why? What was different about it?
Scale, mostly. It was a much larger force, maybe 110, 112 guys operating way behind enemy lines for several days. Intense fighting.
And the A1s played a big role.
Crucial. According to the accounts, the Sky Raiders were absolutely essential in beating back the NVA attacks just long enough for the helicopters to get in and pull the team out. It really underscores how vital OLA support was for these larger, riskier SOG operations.
So SOG support was priority one. Did OLA do anything else? Search and rescue, maybe?
Yeah, SAR was definitely part of their mission set, though SOG took precedence. Doc recalled a specific SAR mission for a downed Marine OV-10 Bronco, call sign Cowboy.
How did they handle a rescue like that?
He described this tactic called the daisy chain. You'd have like 8 A1s flying in a continuous circle over the crash site. Each plane would take turns rolling in, dropping ordnance bombs, rockets, strafing to suppress any enemy ground fire.
Creating a protective ring.
Exactly. And the smoke from the ordnance would also create this kind of visual corridor to guide the rescue helicopter, the Jolly Green Giant, safely into the pickup zone. It was a really coordinated effort.
Sounds incredibly dangerous for the A1 pilots, too, circling low like that.
It absolutely was. And on that specific cowboy rescue mission, Doc's own A1 got hit.
Seriously, what hit him?
A 12.7mm round, a heavy machine gun, hit the engine. He said it started running really rough immediately.
What did he do?
Had to break off from the daisy chain. Another A1 escorted him back to Da Nang, nursing the damaged engine. But the good news was the overall mission was successful. They managed to rescue at least one of the Marine crewmen from the OV-10.
Wow. Getting hit like that and still getting a rescue done? It says a lot. How did Doc talk about the emotional side of protecting those guys on the ground?
He was pretty straightforward about it. He said there was never any hesitation. If guys were in trouble, you did whatever it took to get them out. It was their job. Simple as that, in his view.
Just pure duty.
Yeah, but you can also sense the weight of it. Knowing the risks involved, knowing that sometimes you couldn't save everyone, but the commitment was absolute.
And when they did get people back successfully, must have been a huge relief. You mentioned the Doom Club.
Huh, yeah. That was apparently the nickname for the Da Nang officers' open mess. He said successful rescues were massive morale boosters. There was huge camaraderie, especially with the Jolly Green helicopter crews. They often lived in the same barracks area.
So they'd celebrate together.
Absolutely. Big celebrations at the Doom Club when they brought guys back alive. Though he did note that once the rescued army guys, like the SOG teams, were back, they usually went straight back to their own camps. Not a lot of immediate mixing after the rescue itself.
Makes sense. Different units, different missions resuming. But those later connections, after reunions like SODT, they clearly meant a lot to him.
Oh, definitely. He really emphasized how important it was, years later, to finally meet and talk with some of the specific soldiers they'd pulled out of bad situations. To put faces to the call signs, you know. It provided closure, a shared understanding.
Looking back on the whole experience, what was Doc's overall feeling? Was it satisfaction, frustration?
Maybe a bit of both. He definitely expressed some frustration, maybe disappointment, that for all their effort, all the risks taken day in and day out, the big picture, the overall situation in the war, didn't seem to change much from when he arrived to when he left.
That's a tough realization.
It is. But he always came back to the core motivation. It was about the guys on the ground, supporting them, saving American lives. That was the mission that mattered personally, regardless of the bigger strategic picture.
So if we boil down this deep dive into Doc Blanchard's account, from that Military Tales interview, episode 38. What are the really key takeaways for you?
Well, first, you get this incredibly clear picture of OLA's vital and incredibly dangerous role-supporting SOG. These weren't just routine missions. They were lifelines into enemy territory. Second, the sheer bravery on both sides, the pilots flying low, the SOG teams operating deep. Third, the unique challenges of that kind of close air support the precision needed. The NVA tactics, the constant risk.
Yeah, the lack of margin for error really comes through.
Definitely. And finally, I think that unwavering commitment, the sense of duty to save lives, even knowing the costs, that really resonates.
It really does. It's one of those aha moments, isn't it? Understanding this hidden layer of the war, the critical support structure behind those secret ops, and realizing how long it took for these stories and these connections between the air and ground guys to surface. For you listening, Doc's story just highlights how valuable these firsthand accounts are. They go beyond the history books to the human reality, the personal cost.
Makes you think about the nature of special operations, doesn't it? And how absolutely dependent they are on that dedicated, skilled air support.
Absolutely. And maybe that leaves us with a final thought to chew on. You know, considering how secret SOG was for so long, Doc Blanchard's story is just one perspective that's come out relatively recently.
Right. So what other stories are still out there? From pilots, from SOG members, from the indigenous soldiers they fought alongside? What else can we learn by digging into these previously classified operations and the experiences of the people who live them?
It makes you wonder what layers are still hidden, even in a conflict as heavily documented as Vietnam. There's always more to understand about the individual sacrifice and the hidden mechanics of war.